So we're going to get the panel started with our friends here introducing themselves. And before we do that, here's the format. Lamont and I have about 65 questions to ask them. And we realize we'll get to about three of those questions. Because we want to save some time for you to ask questions as well. Okay? So we're going to go through a couple of questions, get them talking a little bit. But there's going to be time for you to ask them questions also. So you can be thinking about those now. Scott Kelly, who's wearing a dashing cardigan over there, he's going to have some 3x5 cards. If you don't want to ask your question from your seat with a microphone, which I'll be walking around with, you're welcome to hand him, get an index card from him, write your question on there, and I'd be happy to read it for you. Okay? So that's a little bit on our format, and enjoy.
All right, I guess this is where I'll jump in. The first question is, what's your story? Where did you grow up? What was your community like? And what college do or did attend?
Hello, everyone. My name is Karen Gaskins. I'm 23 years old. I'm originally from Elwood City, Pennsylvania, so anyone that's from the area knows it's like just down that way. I'm from a predominantly white town. I believe the population is about 15,000 people, 96 of which are African American, which is my descent. I currently go to Youngstown State University, and I major in psychology.
Hi, my name is Tierra Lucas. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I grew up in the inner city, and I moved to the suburbs in Penn Hills, and I currently attend here. I attended here for undergrad, and I attend here for the master's program.
Man, I'm so nervous right now. No, you can. My name is Andy Santana. I'm from the Dominican Republic, small island somewhere.
What was the other question, man?
You already answered, where did you grow up? What was your community like?
Oh, right. Well, my community is just pure Latinos, Dominicans, what else? Poor community, actually. It's just not too big, not too small. It's an average community. We're close together, and we treat like each other like a family. I attend Geneva College. I'm a sophomore, and I'm a business major.
Hi, I'm Natalia Danielson. I grew up in a suburb, Quakertown, that's north of Philadelphia on the eastern side of the state. And I attended, for my undergraduate studies, Grove City College. I studied English and secondary education. And I'm currently a student here for a master's in student affairs of higher ed. And I'm a graduate assistant over at Grove City College. Oh, I grew up in my community. What was it like? I grew up in Quakertown, predominantly white community. My family is biracial. My mom is Puerto Rican. My dad is from Minnesota. And so we did have family near us in Quakertown in the Lehigh Valley area. A lot of my Puerto Rican family was there. My aunt and uncle, their three kids, their three children, their spouses and children. So I grew up with a lot of Puerto Rican time as well with my family.
Nice. Thanks. We do want to hear what it's like to be on a predominantly white or majority campus as a non-white student. But before we go there, I have kind of a more broad question for you. I'm from Generation X. You're not. And there's some folks in the audience that aren't from that are what we call baby boomers. And so there's different generations. And there might be some beyond the baby boom here, but I won't point anybody out. Oh, boy.
Own it, yes.
So here's the question. For those of us who aren't millennials, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about race as seen through the eyes of your generation. Like, when your generation thinks about issues of race, how does your generation think about it?
Hello again.
You don't have to always start it.
No, I mean, it's cool. I would say that I feel like for millennials, it's a lot more confusing, and I think that that's a good thing. I feel like for past generations, a lot of things were very cut and dry, for better or worse. You associated perhaps with just your race or just your subset or however you want to view it. But for us, we get, I guess, the background of race as, I don't know, our playground, for lack of a better term. We get to interact with people of different walks of life and things like that. And sometimes it's confusing and frustrating. And sometimes, you know, you do just want to go back into your own racial comfort zone. But I think that it's great that we're getting the opportunity as millennials to really get out there and really understand what it means to be a global citizen.
I don't know, it's kind of an interesting question, I think. I think, I don't know, when I think about race and now, I kind of think of it as more of, I think it's more subtle, I think. There's not a lot of, like what you were saying about the cut and dry, and you don't really see it as much, but of course it doesn't mean that it's not there. You know, it's really subtle. So I think in that respect, it's almost a little bit difficult to identify. And then when you do see it, it's kind of shocking because it's still around, you know. So that's just how I feel.
When you say it, you mean racism?
Racism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
I agree with them too. I think, you know, sometimes we feel uncomfortable being around other people. Like for me, for example, when I came up here, when I was, you know, being around a white community, it was kind of, you know, shocking for me because I wasn't used to it. But I think that sometimes, you know, when you feel like that, you just want to go back to your own race and, you know, being around your people. Let's put it that way. But I think, you know, for our generation, I think we sometimes lock ourselves in our own bubble. You know what I'm saying? And I think that it's good for us to just get out of that bubble and interact with other people. You know, it doesn't matter if you're white. You know, it doesn't matter if you're black, Latino, whatever. You know, it's always good to interact with other people, I think. So.
Would you like to?
I can.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, so our follow-up question. Talk a bit about being a person of color at a predominantly white institution. What is it like? It looked like Santana touched on it a little bit, but I guess he could elaborate more. Yeah.
I'll tell you my experience. When I was in Dominican, I went to Cali, lived for 3 years there. I went to an all-white school, It was a private small school. For me, it was hard. I mean, when I got up there, I didn't speak English. I was lost. In the classroom, I didn't understand anybody. Being around white people, you know, sometimes some of my friends ask me, questions. The only thing I could say is yes. They ask me something, yes. And, you know, they ask me, do you understand what I'm saying? I said, no. You know what I'm saying? And I think, you know, sometimes it's hard. Tell you the truth. It's hard and frustrating being around, you know, for me, as being, you know, brown skin, you know, being around all white people, sometimes I feel like I'm out of the place, you know. But once I got used to, started speaking a little bit of English, I think I felt a little bit comfortable.
What about here now?
Oh, yeah, here now?
Yeah.
At
Geneva.
Well, Geneva is an interesting place, to tell you the truth. It is an interesting place, man. People here are so friendly. And my first impression when I came up here, it's like, you know, I'm carrying my luggage and everything. People just came to me and like, can I help you with your luggage? I'm like, what? Man, this is mine. You didn't touch my thing. You know what I'm saying? I'm telling you, man, like, you know, back in my country, back in Cali, if you were carrying like a 20-pound luggage or something, people don't help you. They'd be like, no, you're carrying your own thing. You know, and when I came up here, it's like, can I help you out? I'm like, sure, you can help me out. But you stand close to me.
You can't take my stuff. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So that's, you know, that's the difference, you know. But hey, let me tell you something. Y'all Geneva people, you're my homies, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're good, man. And you've taught me a lot of things, you know. You taught me how to, you know, adapt to different places, you know, like to accept other people, other cultures. And it's good, man. It feels good.
So when you first got here, did you experience any culture shock, anything like
that?
Yeah,
absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, it's different.
Yeah.
You know, it is different. So.
Can I talk a little bit about being a person of color at a predominantly white school? I'm really light-skinned, and so I came from a white, predominantly white neighborhood and predominantly white church, predominantly white high school, and then I went to Grove City out in western PA. My background is one where I do have different cultures as a part of my everyday reality and as a part of my memories, my childhood, the way I grew up, my family, and in the Latino culture, family is really important, and so I was definitely influenced by that. And then I came to Grove City and was, I think, taken off guard. I was almost taken off guard by how I was feeling. I was experiencing culture shock, and I almost didn't expect to. And then I started to notice ways that I stuck out, things that I did differently from the majority. And I had friends friends that would question me or make me feel more self-conscious for what I was doing, whether that was, we can talk maybe, I don't know if we're going to talk about that later, but just different things. And it was really good for me, I think, to just take a closer look at my background, how I grew up, and being a person of color in my culture, but in a community where I looked similar to most of the students around me.
Like I said, I go to Youngstown State University. It's in Youngstown, Ohio, of course. The demographics on our campus, it is a predominantly white institution. One of the reasons that I chose YSU is because I'm from an all-white town. And for me, honestly, speaking to people of my own race was exceptionally difficult. So whenever I was looking at colleges and universities, I wanted there to be at least an amount of diversity, but not so much that it would overwhelm me. And YSU offered that, so that's one of the reasons I selected it. Whenever I went to college, I spent probably my entire first year just in my dorm room by myself because I just could not deal with the different people and the different slang, and not even just like from other races, from my own race, because I'd never been exposed to it, even in my own family. And so that was definitely difficult for me, feeling like, okay, I'm an African-American woman. I don't understand anything that the African-American people are doing. I don't understand most of what the white people are doing, and I've never been exposed to anybody else. So, great, college is going to be awesome. And then as time went on, I decided that I didn't like being alone. I'm a social person. I don't like being on my own. And so I started to reach out, and it was mostly met with, you know, smiles and things like that. But then you do have those occasions of not even necessarily overt racial issues, but just like covert things, like not being invited to certain places or even certain churches or different things like that, or being invited to churches and not even understanding their culture whenever you are of the same racial background and even the same, like, Christian subset. So, I don't know. I think for me it's still a work in progress, honestly. I'm still becoming more open to my own race as well as to other races. But it's definitely interesting being a minority student on a white campus because whether or not you want to be seen that way, you are seen kind of by your race. So.
Well, like I said, I grew up in the inner city, and then I moved to the suburbs in Pittsburgh. So for me, growing up, there was always a mixture of different people, different ethnicities, different religions. So I grew up with a lot of different people. So diversity was something that was just normal to me, you know. And then I ended up going to a Christian high school in Monroeville in Pittsburgh. And it was still, you know, a mixture. And that was when I really got exposed, you know, to the gospel. And I decided that, you know, this is the route that I wanted to take. I wanted to continue in my Christian education. So I had a lot of friends that, you know, had come here. And I checked it out and thought, you know, this is good. I feel like this is a good fit for me. But then when I got here, it was challenging because, like I said, I'm so used to diversity. But I was surrounded by a lot of people who, like, to quote one girl, she said the only thing she knew about black people was what she saw in the news. So that was kind of challenging. My freshman year, it was a big culture shock, because just to know that there were people here who literally did not know me, you know, didn't understand, you know, the things that I am about, you know, things that I am interested in. So I had to do a lot of educating my freshman year, and it was really difficult. Like she was saying about questions, like I got tons of questions, you know, questioning if I was really black, you know, my hair, what, you know, my hair is not, you know, stereotypical black girl hair, you know, since I'm from the inner city, have I ever seen, you know, a crack house, or, you know, just things that are just outrageous. But instead of being upset about it, and I just decided, no, you know, I'll educate you, you know, there's more than what you see on the news, you know, when it comes to black people. So that's my experience.
That's a great way to go into the next question that we're going to ask you guys. The next question is, what are some challenges you encounter at your institution, socially, in the classroom, and communication-wise?
To tell you a little bit more about me, I'm a member of a sorority, Alpha Zeta Delta sorority. The sorority is a non-historically black sorority, and for those of you who don't know much about Greek life, there are essentially two factions of Greek life. There are historically black organizations, and there are everyone else. And I joined in everyone else. So I was lucky enough to become president. I was blessed enough to become president of that organization last year. And to me, that wasn't anything that was absurd or different. I was just, you know, the leader of an organization. But to most of the other people that I encountered, they would be like, what's it like to be president of white people? I'm like, what do you mean? What is it like to be president of white people? What? And it wasn't even something that I had ever thought about. But I guess that's not even necessarily a barrier so much as it is just like, I didn't even think that people thought like that. And so getting into what other people think about and how other people approach race was very weird for me, because I kind of have my own racial blinders on, I guess. Wait, more to the question?
No, you're right. Keep going. Don't stop.
I would say outside of that, within the classroom, I've been very surprised to see very open prejudices from professors. I mean, very open prejudices from professors, and not even necessarily just racially, but, you know, as far as womanizing and things like that. And that's not to in any way downplay my institution. I love my school, but you will have, you know, people in any group that shed a bad light on it. And I'll share one specific story. I'll, of course, not use names, but I was in a classroom with a professor who was, you know, in the middle of teaching, and a student, I believe, who was of Latin or Hispanic descent, raised her hand to ask a question, and she had a bit of a language barrier, so she was having trouble, you know, vocalizing the exact wording that she was trying to get out, and the professor blatantly said, if you can't speak English, you shouldn't be here. And everyone was just taken aback. Like, no one even knew what to do or say, or if we should stand up or leave or what. And it's like, whenever you have somebody in a position of power like that who chooses to abuse that power in such an irresponsible way, it will shock you and it will startle you. And, you know, luckily, that particular individual, you know, it went through the proper channels and it was handled. But just the fact that somebody would do something like that to a student, you know, makes me want to have my guard up. Like, you know, I'm waiting for somebody to say something. You know what I mean? Like, and it shouldn't be like that. Like, it really shouldn't be like that. But yeah, I would say those are some of the highlights of my experience.
Well, I've already kind of touched on mine when answering the last question. But as far as the classroom goes, since our classes are so small, I'm usually one of the few minorities in my class. Maybe the only one, maybe two or three. Usually I'm the only one. So a lot of times when the teachers ask questions, and I was a psychology major too. So a lot of times when the teachers would ask questions, I would kind of be the voice of the minorities. And you can't really do that. You know, I'm just one person. I can't speak for everyone. But I found myself in a position like all the time.
And you would you actually hear a professor say, because I've heard this before.
Oh, yeah.
You'd hear a professor say, Tara, what do black people think about this?
Yeah, or exactly.
Yeah. What's the black perspective on this?
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with Tara. Sometimes I find myself being the only one minority in the classroom. And sometimes, you know, professor would ask me, like you said, what is it like to, you know, what is it like in your country? You know, like, what is it like to be Latino? Or what do you do with this? What do you do with that? You know, I mean, sometimes I don't even know what to say. I'm just like, I have no clue, man. Like, you know. But, I mean, I think, you know, when somebody asks you that question, you just take a step back and, you know, that makes you think. And be like, you know, I have to learn more about something. You know, I have to be, you know, I have to educate myself better, I think. So it's helpful in some way, and it's not in another way. But, yeah, I've experienced what she did. I've experienced, you know, what they talked about. So, yeah.
I think challenges for me in my experience was being biracial, culturally not knowing where I fit in or how, I don't know, fitting in both sides of the story, and I think also sitting in classes with a majority culture, I think part of the challenge for me was, one, people not recognizing that I was different, and so maybe taking their filter off a little bit and making comments about Hispanics or about minorities around me, which would hurt my feelings, and then trying to find a way to communicate that. Also, just difference even in my appearance with my hair, like different things getting ready in the morning. I think what was different was I went to high school with people who looked like me and my friends, and then the college experience was different. I had the dorm experience, so I was living with people who, living with different people and sharing my life. And I think even also just saying, hey, I'm Puerto Rican and white, and people saying, you don't look Puerto Rican. So, you know, okay. and there aren't too many Hispanics and Latinos in this area. And so people saying, we're, you know, asking questions a lot. I think that was probably the biggest challenge was the educating my professors, educating my friends, when I hadn't really had too much time to really learn how to articulate well. I was kind of learning how to articulate as I was educating. And so there was a learning curve for me, a learning curve for people around me. And I'm still learning. But that was probably a challenge. That was one of the bigger challenges for me.
I want to ask a question that's kind of a follow-up, because we've heard stories of some explicit, mean-spirited racism. Yeah. We've also heard stories of well-intended people trying to lend a voice in the classroom, or well-intended students trying to learn, but it comes out the wrong way. You know, it's expressed out of ignorance. Could you, a couple of you, talk about what advice would you give people in the majority, about how to approach conversations about race, whether it's in the classroom or in the residence hall room? Well, how would you help people to approach that?
I mean, one of the things I would tell the majority people is that don't look at skin color, man. Just look who the person is, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're going to talk to somebody, and doesn't matter if, you know, they're brown, black, or whatever, just talk to them like, you know, they're a person. They mean, you know, they mean something in the world, you know what I'm saying? Like, yo, I've had people talking to me like I'm, you know, let's put it this way, like I'm trash, you know what I'm saying, because I'm Latino. I'm like, yo, come on, talk to me like, you know, you mean it. Like, talk to me in a good way, and I'll talk to you in a good way, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, if you come up to a minority, I'm talking to majority here, if you come up to a minority to ask a question and that person looks different, don't just ask a question just to get out of that person. Just ask a question, you know, try to understand that person, you know what I'm saying? Like me, for example, I found myself lonely in a couple places. I've had no people. And the only thing I want from somebody is to come up to me and just talk to me, you know what I'm saying? Like I need that from somebody. And sometimes people come up to me and ask me, you know, these, you know, stupid questions about something. I'm like, all right, you know, thank you for talking to me, but I just need something different. I need you to talk to me like you mean it. So I would just tell majority of people, like, talk to people like you mean it. If talk to people like, you know, like, love on people, man. Like, don't look at skin color, brother. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, skin color is nothing. Skin color is a beautiful thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, doesn't matter if you're white, black, Latin. I'll repeat it three times again. But, like, you know, just love on people. That's it. You know? That's
can
good
I add
thing.
To that? I want to talk anymore. About the skin color thing a little bit, if I can. I agree in the sense that we should talk to people like we mean it. But I just want to say something that about the skin color being a part of our stories, a part of getting to know me, and that we can almost get to the point where we can acknowledge skin color and also treat the person with respect. That this can go along with advice to your I talk with students, majority students. I work at Grove City College in multicultural education and initiatives, and there is a lot of fear that I encounter from students who don't know how to talk or don't know what to ask or I don't want to acknowledge the skin color or say you're black, you know, or you're Hispanic. But to learn to grow comfortable with seeing color, but then also saying that's part of the story, that's part of the bigger thing, and learning to value that, not letting it be a barrier, not letting the, and you can like add to that if you want, because I don't know if I'm articulating it 100%, but skin color to be a valuable thing to getting to know the person.
Yeah. I mean, I would also want to add to that. I think that there's no way to know every appropriate term or to know, you know, everybody's background or anything like that. But I think that as long as you keep it in appropriate context and with good intention, you know, if you're approaching it with the idea of personal education or wanting to build a relationship, and if you understand that you come from a certain context, they're coming from a certain context, and sometimes it's going to be a little awkward, it's going to be a little rough, you might end up offending somebody. I think that just as long as you keep it with that understanding that there is a context for whoever you might be speaking to and for yourself, and that you should be going into it with good intention, not just to, you know, figure out if this is a stereotypical whatever, I think that you'll probably fare pretty well.
I agree with what everyone said.
All right, well, let's do this. Let's move to some questions from the crowd, if you'd like to ask a question, because one of the things that we want this to be is an opportunity and a safe place to ask some questions about race, ethnicity, diversity in other terms, if you'd like to, of some folks who are college students, whether it's undergrads or graduate students. So I'm going to move around with the microphone. Scott does have some note cards over there. If you'd like to grab one of those, you can signal him some way. But who would like to ask? Who would like to get us started?
Don't be shy. We're here for you.
All right. We have a couple in the back. Oh,
I'm not a student, but I'll ask this because one of the fellows in our ministry stumbled in a relationship with an African American friend from Pittsburgh because he assumed that he understood and knew a lot more than what he really understood and knew, and thought, you know, I can get down with you, and then stumbled over himself. So I'm wondering if you could just kind of talk about that experience of people from the majority culture who assume they know a lot more than they know, and they want to, you know, like, yeah, I'm with you in other ways, in an arrogant kind of way. I think they know, understand more about your experience than they know. You get what I'm saying?
I mean, for me personally, I'm just the type of person that I don't enjoy when anybody assumes too much familiarity with me as a woman, as an individual. I just think that there should always be that certain level of respect. And I think that a lot of the problem with race relations is that you feel like once you've had three or four conversations, or you've come over for Christmas, or you've done some certain thing that you're hip with whoever, or whatever the case may be,
I think that that is probably something that just individuals need to be more cognizant of. No matter what, like, you don't know somebody's entire story. You don't know their entire racial story. And like I said, as long as you're keeping more of a self-educational approach or more of just a I'm just interested in you as an individual approach, I think that that probably would have helped your friend out a little bit more. As far as reconciliation, that's probably just going to be between those two individuals. But I would probably say that that's a good path to take.
No, I agree. I agree with what she said, especially about the having three or four conversations with someone and assuming they know. You can't really assume you know anyone based on three or four conversations. So I think it I guess I understand because they, you know, you want to feel like you can relate to someone, like you have something in common with someone. So in that aspect, I can understand it. But like you said, it can be offensive to some people. And I think it would just depend on the person and what type of relationship the two have. So, but yeah, you should really be just cognizant of that and just know that, you know, you should really get to know someone. And sometimes that can take a while, and when things like that happen, it can't be offensive.
I think I'm up next. I was wondering if you, I know three of you guys went to a faith-based college and maybe even at YSU, maybe campus ministry or what options were there on your campus in regards to being a faith-based institution, and just speak to maybe some of the things that were difficult about maybe the worship culture or what was available to you as a person of faith, and then what would be helpful. I think something we're looking at is, you know, how can we not just change the classroom, but, you know, when we come together to worship, when we come together as a body of believers, and having talked with students to say, hey, like, man, I'm missing home, and I'm struggling with the worship culture on campus. What was hard, and then what would be helpful, or what would you like to see more of at your institution? Does that make sense? That was okay.
I can start. Well, like I said, I went to Geneva here, and the worship culture is it's really different from my home church. It's you know, different songs. You know, we sing a lot of the Psalms because, you know, we're Reformed Presbyterian here, and I'm coming from a non-denominational background, so the worship style is like it's completely different. Same as far as, you know, getting together and, you know, lifting of hands and stuff like that. But just the music, and it's not as, I guess, invoking as I'm used to. But that's just me. You know, I'm just speaking for me personally, because I definitely believe that, you know, chapel can change some people. And it has impacted me in my, you know, in my stay here as well. But it definitely took some getting used to. However, I will say that me and a few friends of mine, they have all graduated since, but we had started a mime ministry here, and Geneva was really open to letting us minister during chapel. We ministered a couple times, and which was kind of shocking, I think, because it's not really something that I would have thought that Geneva would be open to, because it's not, you know, it's not as traditional as they, you know, appeared to be. But, you know, that really opened my eyes about Geneva, and that really made me feel more comfortable about being here and expressing myself. So.
My faith background, I came from a more charismatic Pentecostal background and went to Grove City, which is historically Presbyterian. I had a huge shock, faith-based, like going to church, going to chapel. I did not know what to do. I was at a loss, I mean, to speak honestly. And I think this is a hard conversation. It is still a hard conversation for me to have. I mean, I still live in Grove City and work there. and that it's still a part of my I'm still processing through that. And to see hundreds, thousands of people in this community engaging that type of faith practice was eye-opening for me. And I couldn't just be like, I don't get this. I feel very uncomfortable. I mean, I could say that, but I had to do the next step of this is so valid and real for many people that I respect and look up to. How do I engage this? How do I learn? And so, I mean, but to kind of one thing that I did think was done well was I went to a couple international worship services that our school put together, and it was so refreshing. We sang songs in different languages, sometimes different worship styles, different people I saw up front, and because it was international, it was an international service, they involved different students, international students, different students from different cultural groups, and something special about worshiping in different languages and people coming together from their different backgrounds. And I found a lot of healing. It was once a year. Maybe we could do it more. But it was. I mean, those moments stick out to me.
I know at YSU, there are a lot of different faith-based initiatives on campus. The university itself doesn't have any religious affiliation. I was blessed enough to become a member of the CCO. My campus minister is here. It's Garrett. Hi, Garrett. You look awesome. I know that at least within CCO, becoming a more racially diverse group has been a really huge initiative. And I think that one of the things that's made it easier for us to start reaching out is by having our leadership reach out. And whenever they start to do that, it makes us feel more comfortable to do that, and they can help facilitate those interactions. I think that we've found that a very just one-on-one approach helps, you know, just getting out there, meeting new people, sitting at a different area of, you know, the student union or whatever the case may be. I think that that really has been the biggest leap that we've been making. So,
this one I got from the audience, as far as you know, and this is connected to some things that you've been saying, but it's a little different, perhaps too. What have you seen on your campus do to promote inclusive environments? Some of you just spoke to this, that you found effective in making it a community of inclusivity. We're all sitting here with our fingers crossed.
I'm smiling because I came as a freshman. Student organization was started, Students Excited About Diversity. I was a part of that group. And then by the time I graduated, a graduate assistantship opened up in multicultural education and initiatives, which is what I'm blessed to be doing right now. So you ask the question, what have they done? They've done, I mean, I'm in the, I get to do what they, some of the efforts that the institution has supported. I feel like maybe my students could answer that better, but inclusivity that way, I see some change. And conversations with training RA staff, and I don't. Does that you want to share anything from your own institution?
I'm going to give you the flip side of it.
Yeah, go for it.
Again, not to be, you know, speaking badly about my institution. I promise you, I'm a Penguin through and through. But in the things that I have noticed about our, you know, diversity-based initiatives, I think that our school hasn't yet found a way to do it right or to find, you know, effective interventions. We had a race-based panel at my school probably like 2 months ago through the Student Diversity Office, and about 15 people showed up. Almost all were of African-American descent, and it kind of just became a white-bashing session, honestly, and that's upsetting. It was upsetting to me to sit there and listen to it. And so if you all have anything that would help my school, I would gladly take it back there because we haven't quite figured it out yet either. But the effort's there. We're working on it.
Yeah, what sort of things did your, whether it's programs, designs of offices, anything like that, what sort of things happened at your college that were initiatives that encouraged inclusion?
Well, I know here at Geneva, you know, we have the multi-ethnic student services office, and I know before it got changed to that, we had what was known as the Black Student Organization. It's called, you know, the BSO for short. So we did a lot of different things, and we went out into the community and we volunteered, and we had different events, and, you know, even the MSS office here, you know, they have lots of different events, the Taboo Tuesdays, and talking about different topics, you know, that are really socially, I guess, acceptable. So, I mean, I feel like we do some pretty interesting things here.
Yeah.
Do you have anything?
Yeah, you good. Thanks. Nice job. I'd like to say this. We do have to wrap up, but if people have more questions for our students on the panel, you're welcome to come up here after the session. Okay. Well, can you shout it out? I mean, Lamont's in charge, so yeah, go ahead and shout it out.
I think that's an excellent point. I think that the importance of the apology is very real because, like you said, it changes the entire mood of the conversation. Because then you go from feeling like, you know, oh, here we go. Somebody else is trying to, you know, downplay my race or something like that. You know, but whenever that person takes that time to realize that they've done something that, you know, wasn't well received even, and to admit that they did that and to make an effort to correct that. That lets you know where they're at as a person, and that lets at least me know that I can, you know, trust them a little bit more. So I think that was an excellent point. Thank you.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. I love that. Thank you, and thank you for calling on them. because that posture of humility is so important for us, right? I mean, and that's the all of the things that have been spoken about from up here. And thank you, because this is a courageous thing that you've done. So we should give them a hand now. One of our speakers this morning was talking about the idea that change within the campus community happens based on friends and faith. On friends and faith. And I think that was a strong note of encouragement, and I heard those things come from you all, and that I think that the things that you're doing on your campuses is more effective than what most of our offices could do. So thank you for your good work. And I'd also like to say this as a member of the majority and to the majority, remember that we have racial stories too, and that's a really, really important thing for us. My wife is, I'm in a multiracial marriage. My wife is half Korean. And she works with majority students sometimes, helping them map their racial stories, right? That white people have a racial story. And it evolves and it changes. It can become more rich as you develop in those two avenues of faith and friends. And for me, you know, my racial story radically changed when I entered into a multiracial marriage and a multiracial family. And it made my life more rich and robust. And so I encourage our majority students to think about that as well as they go from here today.
I just want to say just one thing about students, you have so much authority on college campuses. We really want to push you to understand that you're worth a whole lot more than you think you are. I really want you to really understand that you can make an institution transform if you know who you are. You are meaningful. You have a call in your life right here, right now, to bring change. You are leaders of an institution, and y'all could bring change. I really want you to own everything God has given you on your campuses to transform an institution, whether it's injustices, whatever it may be, differences, who's going to take charge? That's my charge to you, students, because y'all have the authority and power to change an institution. You are our future. You are our future. To have these conversations, who's going to stand up and have these conversations? Who's going to stand up and go and break barriers? You have what it takes, because a lot of college students, you know, try to figure out, what am I called to do? What is my purpose? And once you get that connection, you start running. But you, I want you to be on campus and living on campus with a purpose. You have a meaning here. It's a reason why you're at the institution that you are. I want you to own everything God has given you to transform a college or institution. Tell the leadership administration, we need change. Because they need you. We need you. If they don't have you, they don't have anything. So that's the charge I'm leaving here with you as you leave to go to your respective places. You can bring change. You have the power and authority. Take it. Own it. It's yours. I'm done. I'm done preaching.
Hey, I do want to say again, one of our finest moments today was the voice of our students and recent graduates. So thank you again, and I'll say again, this is a courageous act and an act of service to all of us. So thank you for that, and thank them one more time, please.